This is the Apple This Extra.
Hello and welcome to Apple This Extra. This is episode number 67, coming hot on the heels of episode 66, which was our roundtable about WWDC keynote on Monday. Today, myself, Dave Nason, and my colleague Thomas Donville, also known as Anonymous, are delighted to be joined by two people from Apple, live from WWDC conference this week. We have the head of accessibility at Apple, Sarah Herlinger, and we have one of the accessibility technicians called Dean Hudson. Thomas, thanks for joining me. We're delighted to be getting the chance to interview these guys today.
Oh, definitely. I'm so excited to meet with these two, and I know that we are going to learn a great deal of things today, and I hope our listeners will too. It can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a big keynote, wasn't it? It was, you know, we talked about a lot on Monday, and, you know, people can listen to that podcast for the full details of what we talked about in our immediate kind of aftermath, but there was a lot there.
Definitely, a lot to soak up, and even today, I'm still soaking things up and hearing things that we didn't really pick up on the WWDC day itself, and so as we're starting to get our hands on these betas, more and more things are starting to pop up, so this makes this even more exciting of a podcast to listen to.
Yeah, it seems, I think we all know that like iOS 12 was a performance update, and I think whether you have accessibility needs or not, it wasn't a feature-rich release last year, whereas this year I think there's a bit more there in the accessibility world as well, and in general when it comes to features. So I think we're going to have plenty of questions.
Oh, definitely. And I think that what I came away with from Monday with a lot of people saying, is that all? Is that it? And I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? There was a lot there. I think for every one thing they mentioned, there were probably 20 things they didn't mention. And there is so much under the hood that, like you said, this is a vast difference, a stark difference between last year's iOS 12 to this year's iOS 13. And that is the same for those with accessibility. There are quite a few small changes and new things that we can expect, which I'm very excited to talk about.
Indeed. So let's welcome our two guests. We have all the way from California in the middle of WWDC week. They've taken the time out to talk to us. We have Sarah Herlinger and Dean Hudson. Do you guys want to tell us a little about yourselves? Dean, do you want to go first and tell us, you know, who you are, what you do?
Yeah, sure. And thanks for having us. This is a real honor. I am Dean Hudson. I started here at Apple probably 2006, where things were starting to roll, and have been here in the accessibility engineering team when there were three of us. But it has now expanded greatly. But it's been a real fun ride all the way through the advent of iOS, making that accessible up through Apple TV, Watch, and HomePod. It's been a really fun ride. And now, the last few years, I've worked for Sarah as the accessibility evangelist at Apple. So really, really fun times.
I'm Sarah Herlinger, and I lead our efforts in the Global Accessibility Policy and Initiatives team. I get to work with Dean, which is always a lot of fun. And our team really focuses on accessibility as a core corporate value for Apple. So we look holistically at all the ways that we can infuse accessibility into the Apple ecosystem, whether that be through products or services or stores or anything that we do. Just making sure that every employee at Apple understands what accessibility means to us as a company, and that all of our users know about all the amazing things that we are working to do so that they take advantage of those and get more out of their devices.
Cool. So I guess your job is making sure that accessibility is there on the ground floor of every project. Is that kind of an idea?
Yep. Absolutely. And through both Dean and I, we look at all those different areas. So, you know, we get to get in early and often into all of the different projects here to make sure that everybody thinks about accessibility and what they do.
What an exciting job to have. That is like a dream, you know? It's amazing to hear you guys been there for so long, especially Dean since 2006 and was part of a team of three. That just totally blows my mind where we are today in terms of what we have gone so far with both of you. And that's
what do you think,
amazing.
Like, to join 1 year before the iPhone launched, everything that's happened since.
Yeah. Well, I should say I am a VoiceOver user, totally blind, and you know, it's just very fun. The thing that you have to keep in mind, and it's really it takes a lot of character, but you have to be patient. You know, people want things to happen tomorrow, and it just doesn't work that way. But in the end, you know, we took some time to develop and get things right, and it has paid off. We kind of lead the industry now in accessibility. And it's because we started at a ground level, as Sarah was saying, before even any lines of code are written, we get in there with the teams and get people to think about accessibility early.
That's cool. That's such an advantage for you in a sense in what you do, because you are both an expert in being a blind customer and you're an expert in Apple and what's going on the inside of the company, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly why I stole him away from the engineering team and brought him over to become our tech evangelist, because he is so good at being able to go to every team in the company and really express to them the importance of the work that we do and get them to really think about not just the blind community, but every community that we support.
Educate. That's the key words, to educate everyone and explain how to dive in and do it the right way.
Yeah. And I've seen in my own work, like the difference the passion can make, you know what I mean? So it's not just dryly telling them this is the features, but when they can actually see a human being using those features and the difference, I'd say, I think that goes a long way when you're speaking to an executive or a project manager or whatever it might
be. Yeah. Yeah. No, there were a few times when I would just bring my device to an engineer on the audio team, for example, and say, this is wrong. This doesn't work. Can you guys do something about this? And they're like, oh my gosh. You're using this? Like, yeah. We should fix this.
That's awesome.
A lot of years of great work being done.
Fantastic. And of course, we're in the middle of a very busy time of year for you guys. We had the keynote on Monday. I would say one of the highlights of the show was the announcement of voice control and that demo that we saw. Do you want to kind of tell us a little bit? We saw highlights. There's probably plenty to talk about around voice control.
Yeah, we're really excited about voice control. You know, one of the things that has been important to us as an accessibility team is to continually look at new user groups that might not otherwise be able to use our technology. You know, how do we keep pushing forward and making sure that everyone who wants to use an Apple product has the opportunity to do so and has the tools available to make that simple and easy and fun. And voice control is a feature that was built with individuals with extreme physical motor limitations in mind. So it is individuals who wouldn't be able to use their devices unless they were able to use their voice. But what voice control does is give them full access to their devices. And it is built into both macOS and iOS platforms. So for any iOS device or Mac, being able to really control and use your device with just your voice. That would be all elements of navigation, you know, opening apps, opening menus, moving around on the different devices, as well as things like, you know, dictation, text editing, and doing those things in a seamless fashion. So moving from one to the next, you know, saying open pages, dictating text, then saying open photos, and doing, you know, something in your Photos app, things like that, all sort of moving through seamlessly and not having to kind of move from one to the other in a more stunted way. We wanted it to be something that was really useful and efficient for those users who rely upon their voice.
And what I sort of speculated on Monday that maybe it was built on the same framework, if that's the right terminology, as VoiceOver and Switch Control, so that if you designed for one, you design for the other. Is that the case, or is it a whole different?
It does take advantage of the accessibility API that's built into our software developer kits. So yeah, one of the messages that we've really tried to express out to developers this week is how important it is to use that accessibility API and how when you do it, you get so much from it. You know, with all three of those utilizing that, you know, if you are someone who it's sort of the, well, if you're concerned about one group, hey, you're going to get the other ones for free. You know, we definitely want everyone to use this and to really be good digital citizens when it comes to accessibility, because this is the foundation for so much of what we do.
That's so intriguing, because it makes me think in my mind, I'm trying to grasp how that framework work, as in, so the elements that you see on the given page, is that the same as a voiceover? So when you say, are you able to go to more specific, like go right for?
Well, so to give an example, when you think about how important it is in voiceover to label elements on the screen, to label mm-hmm. images and buttons and things like that, one of the things that then both Switch Control and Voice Control does is it hooks onto those individual elements as well. And so in, for example, with Voice Control, one of the features to it is being able to say show numbers, and then any of those elements, anything that would be tappable or clickable, depending on whether it's an iOS or a Mac device, becomes something that shows up on the screen, so that you could, for example, in the Photos app, say show numbers, and then say tap 14, and it is that specific photo that you're trying to get to, which really improves the efficiency for someone using voice. But underneath, it's also using that same framework to it.
You know. Yeah. I think even Eric gave an example in the keynote the other day, or not the keynote, sorry, the State of the Union, where he tried to click on an element and it didn't work. And he said, see, it didn't work because it doesn't have an accessibility label. So it definitely mm-hmm. hinges upon the accessibility underneath the API. So.
Yeah,
that's cool. Sorry.
It's all the same foundational API, but we also allow even more specific API. So developers who want to create even better experiences for voice control and such, or for a voice control only experience, they can do that too. So the API is the common base, but it allows very detailed customization to make really great experiences for each one of these types of assistive technology as well.
Wow, that is amazing. It really does going to kind of bring in a roundabout way. You're also bringing up voiceover accessibility issue up, like you just mentioned. There are elements or buttons that are not labeled correctly, and that is definitely going to bring that to forefront with the developers if they want to take advantage of this control. What if you had? I know a lot of these elements sometimes just like to have just pictures. I mean, how do they know what to say for that particular picture?
Well, actually, we have a new feature that we've added in this year that I think will be very helpful in that area. I'm going to let Dean grab this one.
We're trying to wait till we get to the features, but you guys have pulled it out of us. So one of the features, and I'm going to get loud because talking about features, I get excited, that we're introducing for iOS is to auto-label buttons. So if a developer puts this hamburger menu or just puts a picture on the button, we will, through machine learning, you probably heard a little bit about that during the mm-hmm. keynote, determine what that button might be labeled. So, and I've tested it. It works pretty good. I've used some crazy applications. And it does a pretty good job. So that's sort of how, if someone does give a picture, we sort of auto-label it, and that's how it would get sort of picked up.
That's interesting, because you had somewhat of a feature like that now, when sometimes it will predict what it thinks it is. And that works. And so this is more enhanced. And
this is more images.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now it's reading text, isn't it? Visually on a button.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we always try and do is build on from what we've done, but never stop, you know, working on any of these features. So, you know, we have had this available for text. Now we are using machine learning as it continues to grow and use that to be able to, as Dean said, try and figure out what that is an image of and give you that information. So it might say button, possibly home or whatever it might be, so that as best we can, we are trying to add that additional information for you so that you have more context. As always, we try and work with every developer and tell them the more important thing is that you do actually go through and label all of these. And that's why we have tools like the Accessibility Inspector in Xcode with its auditing capabilities that allow you or that give you information along the way as an app designer to know what you can do to be a better, better accessibility citizen. But on top of that, when we know that when people don't, we want to try and make sure that we are improving that situation and really using tools like machine learning to make that better for the community.
Cool. And do you see yourself, I kind of had this idea that maybe even people who don't have any motor issues, but maybe they just have their phone on a charging stand at their desk, and rather than picking the phone up, they just look over at their phone and use voice control. Have you found yourself doing that, Sarah, at all? Or
just sort of using voice control as its own, even as someone who is not in the community? Yeah. I think voice control has, it does have applicability that can go beyond the specific audience for which, we kind of looked at the sweet spot. So yeah, I think one of the things that we will find as time goes by is the number of people who use this in many other circumstances. I've certainly had members of the media and such thus far say things like, oh, I'm this will be great for me as I'm driving in my car, or, all different kinds of possible use cases. And we look forward to seeing how people use them. I mean, it's been interesting even for us to see how people who are not members of the blind community turn on voiceover for things here and there. We know that a lot of these types of assistive technologies can be used by other, for other use cases. But first and foremost, we want to make sure we're making the best tools for the communities that rely on them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just I was thinking, I suppose, in the context that it can really help to drive use of the accessibility API if a larger group of people in the media are talking about it.
Yeah.
So, Dean, you alluded to other accessibility features or other new features. Is there anything else that you want
to? I first like to say WWDC was remarkable this year. We have unleashed a ton of features that are just, we're really excited about. And the other piece of that is being at WWDC, we just saw developers one after another just very excited about making their apps accessible. So I just want to put that out there. We did a couple of events or just sort of mingle events where we had tables set up so people could see some accessibility features. And it was just packed. And you could just feel the excitement when engineers came up and asked about making my app accessible, what do I do? And you have these long conversations, well, you need to do this and try this. And it was just very, very cool. I'll start with VoiceOver, because that's what I use on the Mac. One of the exciting things that we were very excited to bring to the Mac this year is LibLui. And that gives us more than 80 languages for Braille. And that's really, really cool.
Wow.
You guys know LibLui is open source, and so it's continually growing, so we'll continually to get more languages. Also, we've had a lot of requests for VoiceOver in Braille to bring sort of a single word mode. For iOS users, you'll know this, when you use your Braille display, you've probably got maybe an 18 or 12 cell Braille display. iOS, it only shows one item at a time, to help you maximize that little space that you have. Well, on the desktop, we brought that option there as well, so that if you have an 80-cell Braille display, you turn on this option, you will see one item at a time. And so you can go back and forth between either of those modes. So that was really cool. We've also improved Braille input typing. So we know that there are some people in the blindness world that use Braille. They are very, very fast typers. We know that those folks are out there. And we've made it now so that you can type as fast as you need to get what you need done, and it'll just work great.
Bravo. Bravo.
Yeah. We definitely listen to you guys and all of you. We've improved Braille support on pages that support ARIA. there were some issues even in mail that we addressed. So now when you paste text, we don't jump to the top of the email. We keep it right there. There were some issues with messages. We fixed that and in FaceTime. So some really, really great Braille improvements. We think you guys are really going to love it.
That's cool. I know some Braille users are going to be very happy to hear.
Yeah.
Has much of that made it to iOS as well, or was that Mac specific?
That's all, both iOS and Mac.
Wow, that's pretty
cool. Yeah, including LiveLui, which is also an Apple TV too. So all of our Braille supported platforms, we've brought those LiveLui tables to expand what you are able to access. And so, you know, even when you think about things like the fact that you can, on Apple TV, you can get captions through your Braille display. Mm-hmm. If those captions are provided in one of the LiveLui languages, great way to be able to get that information too.
Some other things that we've done for VoiceOver and desktop is custom punctuation. This is very big if you are a coder. When you're reading email, that's fine. You can have different levels of punctuation. But when you're reading code, it's very important to customize your punctuation so that you see the symbols that you need to see. And that will be sort of like activities. It will be sort of built in. So if you switch between mail, you switch between Xcode, you'll get your right punctuation level.
So you can kind of say, okay, I'm in Xcode. I need to hear the colons and the semicolons and the brackets.
Right. And in mail, I don't necessarily need to hear that.
Yeah, sort of. Rather than just having that, you know, sum most all, it gives you a lot more granularity in how you can do that customization. And this is another one that is also on iOS. And one of the other cool things about it is that through CloudKit, you can sync your those preferences from one to the other. So that which you set up as a custom punctuation on macOS will automatically be able to be available to you on iOS.
That's beautiful. Any improvement in Xcode, especially code lining, reading capabilities, that's a big improvement.
And that's the cloud bit, I have to say, that as someone who uses both Mac and iOS, like the ability to just, you know, even with things like keyboard shortcuts, that you don't have to set them up again, you know, and the same with this punctuation, just having it synced.
Absolutely. And Thomas, I heard you mention Xcode. Dean, I know you have been really excited about Xcode as a coder yourself. So
yeah, Xcode is really huge. It's a big, big application. And so what we wanted to do is focus on where you spend most of your time, and that's in the editor. And so we've improved, for example, code completion. As you're typing in the name of a function or method, you hit tab and it auto-completes. We can now access that. Another point that we improved on is if you set, I'm going to get this wrong, I'm going to say landmarks. It's not landmarks, but where you need to debug code, you set these markers. Those markers are now accessible. We've also added some rotors now that will allow you to navigate between methods and between scope. So if you've had like nested if loops, you can now navigate between those and just makes it really easy for you to jump around in your code. So yeah, many, many fixes around editing. We think that's going to make that experience a lot better.
That's beautiful.
That's cool. We do get a lot of questions on AppleViz.com about Xcode. It pops up every now and then, you know, as people looking for help with it. And
we continue to work on that. One of the projects that you guys have probably heard of is Everybody Can Code. Mm-hmm. And we've done that with Swift, with the iPad. But we know there's more there. Eventually, you're going to get to some levels that you need to use Xcode. And we really want to focus on that to make that a fantastic experience.
Yeah. And to jump on, just to stick with VoiceOver, but to jump platforms and go to iOS real quick, a couple of things to bring to your attention. One of which is just that when you go into settings, you're going to find accessibility in a different place. And that is that it's been up-leveled in settings. So rather than having to drill in from, you know, tap on settings, then go to general, then go to accessibility, it's now at that top level of settings, just below general in the flow, in the chronology there. And that was really important to us because we wanted to make sure that it becomes that much more discoverable for people and that they use these features more. One of the other things we've done with it is we've also built accessibility into the sort of setup flow, what we call Buddy, as you get a new device. So while for a voiceover user, you may already know that, doing that, the triple tap will get you, the triple tap and the side button will get you to, or will turn voiceover on. For some of those other accessibility features that people may well have felt, oh, I can't get to this until after I get through setup, we wanted to make sure that those were ready right up front so that if you need to invert the colors or increase your font or things like that, that you can, you know, find those earlier in the process.
Another one is customizable gestures for iOS.
You got my next question.
So that's, think about things like control center, home screen, app switchers. You can now assign those to, say, two-finger quadruple tap.
Oh, that's nice. That's going to be a game changer.
Yeah, we think so.
Yeah, you can even assign Siri shortcuts to voiceover commands.
Oh, fantastic.
That's going to be amazing right there. Voiceover, customizable voiceover gestures. I love that.
Yeah. And in fact, both platforms are now, we have full keyboard access. So if you have your iPad now and you have it connected to a Bluetooth, even gestures, say the rotate gesture or the two-finger hold, two-finger double tap and hold, you can now assign those to a keyboard command so you can perform those actions on your keyboard.
Cool. Oh, yeah, wow. Actually, I read a bit about there being new keyboard shortcuts across the platforms. Could you tell us a little bit more about what's been kind of added there?
iPad OS has more commands in apps, and I think that's connected to the full keyboard access that's now available.
Okay, cool.
Okay. And then I really love the new Siri voices, by the way. The new, that was beautiful. I liked hearing that. I'm guessing we will be able to use it as a voiceover voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Awesome. And have we gained any new voices like Eloquence or anything like that?
No Eloquence voices, but the new Siri voices are also available on the watch. So that's another one.
Brilliant. We heard the US one. Are there international new Siri voices, or at the moment is it US?
My understanding at this stage is it is starting with US, and I think we'll have to see where they go from there.
Yeah.
Well, making accessibility down onto the root of settings, that's a big thing, as in terms of the Apple recognize that this should be upfront to everyone, they're sighted or not, they're going to come across this and be curious and jump into that. So I'm really excited that you guys finally put that up in front and to the main section with the main components.
That's been a step-by-step process, hasn't it? Because I remember when it moved from the bottom of the general up towards the top of general, and now it's into the...
So our evangelism has worked.
Yeah. Good job, Dean. Good job.
we haven't talked about some of the low vision features.
I was going to ask that.
So on the Mac, do you want to talk about the hover?
Yeah. So on macOS, we have a couple of great new features we've added. The one that I'm most excited about as someone who is a glasses wearer and who does struggle with small text is a feature called Hover Text. It's a new way to make it easy to view text on your Mac display. What you do is if you hover over any text with your cursor and press down on the command key, you get a dedicated window with a large high resolution text field, and which states or which gives you whatever is the text that's underneath that cursor. And you can blow it up to 128 point. You can choose the font type that works best for you or that you prefer. You can also change the color of both the text and the background and the cursor that surrounds the text on the showing up on the screen. And, lots of customization available so that whatever your vision needs are as a low vision user, you can be able to sort of customize that to work best for you. And one of the other things that I love is, for a long time we've had a feature in that is say element or say text under the pointer. And so when you turn that on, you not only get this, you know, giant text in your own, you know, customized in the way you want it to look, but it will also speak that out under as it's going over the element as well. So, you know, text that would be in a menu or in a doc that might be smaller than what you would want it to be, you now have the opportunity to be able to take any text and just blow it up on the screen.
That's actually huge because, you know, there's some people who are not quite at full screen reader level. They don't need that, but they need that little bit of help sometimes with a bit of speech. And I think that's huge. And also, like, I have an application at work which doesn't support screen readers very well in terms of keyboard commands. So I can use it with the mouse by running the mouse over certain sections and it'll read what's under there.
Yeah. We have another feature called Zoom Display, which is for multi-display users. So if you're someone who uses two screens, Zoom Display will let you keep one screen zoomed in close while the other one remains at standard resolution. So it could be great for everyday work when you are just on your own working on two monitors in an office. But also one of the other applications for it that we've seen thus far is in terms of doing a presentation. You know, maybe you want your audience to see the screen in that standard resolution, but you want to blow up something on your own device so that you can zoom in on areas and get more information as you are presenting out to the world. So a really cool way to think about, you know, multi-display users and how low vision users might use them differently than someone else. And then also we added in color filters in the same way that we have them on iOS. So these are filters that support things like color blindness. And we have filters that are specifically built for different types of color blindness, but also being able to do just a straight color tint over the screen. So, you know, we've received feedback from individuals with Irlen syndrome and other types of vision challenges where just being able to have the screen tinted to a specific color, you know, to do any kind of work on the device has been really helpful. And so we're excited that that has moved over to the Mac too.
I know you guys had a question about, I'm going to get the name wrong, but the feature that allows a developer to develop their iPad app, but then move that over to the desktop.
Project Catalyst.
Yes, thank you. The question was, will accessibility be intact? And happy to say that yes, it will.
Oh, so wow.
If the developer does the accessibility work on iOS, that will transfer to macOS.
That's going to bring huge opportunity for a whole range of apps.
You know, we were both talking about that, Hal, when we saw that demonstration where you were able to click that little checkbox to for Mac, and we were wondering if that part of that system to analyze your code would be able to take the accessibility along with it or improve on it and point it out to them in certain areas. So we have thought about that.
And will that then, I suppose, automatically change from the hint text, for example, which might be, you know, double tap to select on the iPad app, and that's, you know, VO spacebar to select.
Yeah. Yeah. Some little things we have to work through, but for the most part, they look exactly the same. And even some of the sounds we brought over to the desktop.
Yeah, and the nice thing for the developers, they can use that iOS accessibility API and it just ports over to the Mac.
Yeah.
So the work that the time and effort and energy that someone puts in on one, pays forward over into the other.
Yeah, it's a really interesting project. Like, I know it was mentioned on stage, Twitter is back suddenly, you know, there was a lot of talk about hearing a few months back.
Yeah, definitely. So do they have tools can you say, Dean, that the developers have tools that can we recommend to you developers, do they have any tools of any kind that can analyze their code and let them know where they lack in the accessibility areas and where to focus on to make improvements?
Yes. So the accessibility inspector is where to go. And we've made, over the last few years, several improvements to it. One is really cool is that you can audit an application. So the developer can have their application up on their iPad, target that iPad, and change accessibility right there. So if they see a button that's not labeled, they can label it there, and they can touch on their iPad and suddenly it has the label. So we highly recommend, if at the very least, that the developer runs that audit tool, so at least they know the areas that they need to go and fix.
Have you ever considered, because people would ask this on the site sometimes, have you ever considered requirements along those lines as opposed to recommendations? Or is that something that's possible? Because I know accessibility is such a broad thing and every app is different, but we kind of wondered that.
Yeah, that is one of the things that we, you know, we look at this issue a lot. It's not something that goes, unnoticed, but it is a very complex issue. And, I think as we look at how many things fall under the term accessibility, and as well the levels of accessibility of something. So even if you look at just VoiceOver, what is the stamp that says, you know, seal of approval? And so we're constantly trying to look at new ways, including things like doing the machine learning automatic label detection, to try and make it easier and to build these tools to be more comprehensive and to be simpler and easier for developers so that they have fewer reasons to not do it. You know, we want everybody to just do it and make it so that it's not even necessary to have a listing. But, mostly we just want to try and do everything we can to make everything as accessible as possible. One of the other things to note as well in terms of auditing, we also now have a new accessibility audit tool for web content in Safari. So that's another area where we've tried to look beyond apps and into web content as well.
Oh, that's nice. That, you know, I appreciate you being upfront, because you're right, Sarah. The complexity, I can't imagine defining the word what is accessible. For a blind person, that's one thing. Low vision is one thing. Those with dexterity or motor issues is another thing. And so it's not a clear cut and dry scope that we can just stamp and say, you guys got to do this, because I can't imagine the complexity that have to be behind something. And obviously we can't just say this is VoiceOver accessible, because then you're singling out all the others that have other accessibility issues. So,
even accessibility is connected to usability, and I might find it not very intuitive and you might not.
Plenty of times where someone says it's accessible, and say it's accessible for me, I can use it, but you know, someone else may think, I don't like that, I can't. So it's really gray area, but it's something that we're striving to make easier, as Sarah said, and I think we're going to get there.
That's awesome. Now, one of the things you guys were talking about in the keynotes, and I had wondered, the new gesture to do a three fingers pinch to copy and three fingers spread to paste. And I thought, oh, that's so brilliant. I suppose that can be used as a VoiceOver custom gesture.
We have accommodated that. Yes.
Awesome.
So we have some gestures that you can use to do that, perform those actions.
Yeah, I think as with everything, our goal even for the things that would be considered general, you know, mainstream elements of the OS, we always do try and be thoughtful in how a VoiceOver user could navigate that or use it, and also how someone using Switch Control could, or how someone using Voice Control. I mean, we look at all of these different elements and try and be as thoughtful about each as we can.
That does bring us back actually to a related question that I guess I forgot to ask earlier, was voice control and voice over. Can they play together, or are they distinct in terms of features?
Well, so I would say at this stage, much in the way that voice over was initially built as a feature for the blind community, our goal with voice control was to be able to support those with extreme physical motor limitations. So we look at that first and foremost. If you use headphones with voice control and you're a VoiceOver user, you may be able to get functionality out of it. But I think when we do these, we often sort of look at, let's build out one thing, make sure we've got it, and then we continue to iterate from there and do more. So in the same way that, initially the way that Zoom and VoiceOver work together, that's improved over time. Yeah. The way other things have happened, I think we want to come out of the gate with something that's really a great feature for the community that needs it most, and then figure out from there how we expand.
Absolutely. It's got to be one of the most complex features you've built in a long time, I would imagine.
No doubt. And I'm thinking too, is that I've heard just yesterday somebody revealed that about how there's a new feature within accessibility for those on iPad that can use their little mice, their mouse, they can actually use that as a cursor pointer.
Yeah, we do now have mouse support for iOS. It is a part of assistive touch. And just to give that little bit of background on assistive touch, assistive touch is another one of our features that we created specifically for individuals with physical motor limitations, which allows them to be able to use the device when they may have very limited dexterity, but some. So for example, if you can only use one finger and one finger alone to work a device, then when you start thinking about things like how do you do a four-finger swipe or a pinch, this is something that was built in to support those users. And a logical extension of that is someone who may need, you know, they aren't using their finger itself on the screen or on their devices, even on computers, but they use something like a joystick or an assistive mouse that allows them to be able to use the device and navigate in an alternative fashion. So adding in mouse support on iOS is really first and foremost meant to make sure that another community that might otherwise not be able to use a product has that opportunity to do so. We're getting feedback that other people are appreciating it as well, and that's fantastic. But we really, you know, initially look at how do we make sure that we continue to widen the users who are able to use our products in their own, you know, individual unique ways.
Oh, no doubt. There, you know, I do have clients that will use that mouse, and they will hover over something, and I will speak back to them what they're hovering over. So little things like that I've seen in the desktop realms is we always try to wish for things on iOS and iPad iOS and things like that. So any new features like that is very welcome to all line of disabilities.
Yeah. And I think one of the key things with this is what we wanted to do was figure out how you use a pointing device like you would use your finger, not so much reimagine how an iPad and a mouse would work, but really focus on how you can get that sort of touch functionality, but using a mouse.
Now that we're getting to kind of wrapping things up, I am curious if you guys have any other comments or further features revealing that you would like to reveal to our listeners that may have not been discussed at the keynote or into the mainstream in terms of iOS, iPad, or the Mac?
One we haven't talked about but was not in the keynote but was in another presentation is the Apple Card. I know that there's been some concerns about how that would work for people who are blind. I've been using it here, testing it, and it's fantastic. One of the things that I've experienced with credit cards is you get this bill, paper bill, and I have no idea what that thing says. I can scan it, and even then it doesn't tell me where I'm spending my money. And now having that all accessible on iOS is amazing. So just thought I'd put that out there.
Yeah. And I would say just sort of in the bigger picture around things, we didn't even get to all of the things, even just for the blind and low vis communities that we've done over the course of this set of updates. To add in one more, just a quick one, Zoom went through a pretty big redesign on tvOS to just make it easier for individuals who are low vis to be able to control and navigate their devices. And, you know, I think we could pull out a few more, but in thinking about time, well, part of it I would say is just go in and start, exploring, because I think really in all the nooks and crannies, you're going to find different settings, different new things that are there that are helpful. And we want people to take advantage of it. And we want people to give us feedback, just to give the plug for the accessibility@apple.com email address. That is our customer-facing email address, and we appreciate that we get a lot of great feedback every day from our users on how things are working for them, whether it's asking us questions, reporting bugs, whatever it might be. But we would love to get your thoughts on the work that we've been doing, and you know, helps us to figure out what we keep doing into the future.
Great stuff. Well, I think that about does it for us today. Just time to thank you guys again for joining us. We really appreciate it on a really busy week, I'm sure. So Sarah and Dean, thank you so much. And Thomas, thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So Thomas, interesting conversation.
Oh, indeed. I mean, I'm sure I'm like everybody else. I was just ready for the next thing, ready for the next thing, ready for the next thing. But yet I'm so focused on what they had to say. And so I really love the time that we had to spend with them in details. But as always, it's never enough time. And these, you know, and I was so blessed to have these two people that probably are so busy in their life already. And we were just so honored and blessed to have at least a half hour with these folks. And I don't know, I think in general, our listeners, is that for every single thing they discuss here today that is new and revealing to you, is probably 10 more new things under the hood that we have going to see when iOS 13 comes out. And this is the exciting part about this year, yeah, Dave, is that this is not like iOS 12 where we had a few things and that was it. But this sounds like we have a lot of little changes coming our way, along with some big changes that were not announced. Yeah. Like,
I think we like hit the highlights, but there's definitely a lot of little extra.
Oh, yeah.
Little gems, hopefully, you know.
I thought the low vision people got a huge boost in the Mac area.
I think that was overdue as well. I think Zoom had been, some of those users probably had felt a little neglected versus voiceover users in recent years. And I think it looks like Apple have really put an effort in this year to make sure that they really caught up to where they want to be.
Well, it tells you the significant, because they made a point of that. And that not only just on the Mac, but as Sarah was saying, she made a point of it. They revamped it in iOS, which is long overdue. But especially, you know, the first and foremost of everything that's even new, if they came out hard and heavy on the Braille stuff, that was huge.
I had Scott Davert speaking in my ear the entire time while they were talking about Braille.
All the millions of questions I'm sure a lot of people have, but just knowing the fact that their focus on Braille this year is forward and foremost, it was way, way overdue, and I'm so ecstatic and excited to hear that.
Crossing all our fingers and on our toes that it's the performance is there, you know.
Speaking of crossing fingers and toes, what you think about the voiceover gestures customized?
Really cool. Really, really cool. That,
I mean, I'll have to see which
gestures. Yeah.
How deep can we get with it? And I mean, it sounded like the keyboard is going to be like where it's going to really take hold. You can redo some of the gestures with the keyboard. If it's complicated already for us to do a four-finger double tap on something, oh my gosh, we can now make that easier. But if we can intertwine this with a certain thing that I want to use day in, day out, that's a game changer.
Yeah, absolutely. Because some people, like, you know, even like iPhone 10 or above, you know, that don't have the home button, and maybe some people struggle with those new swipe, you know, the new home gesture and the new app switcher gesture. So maybe they could replace that with a two-finger double tap or whatever it might be, you know, that they find easier to perform. So
I like the fact that the voice control as a whole, it was meant for a specific people with disability, but in a whole, it does cover with the voice over API, which means that only is like you're going to knock out two birds with one stone, really, because...
Yeah. And that's why I love the media attention voice control is hopefully getting, because if this drives a developer to go, I'm going to actually put the effort in to do that, we'll get voiceover support for free alongside that, you know?
Exactly. They said, well, I'm going to have a label on that so they can say something or whatever not. And I think it works hands in hands. And on top of that, Dean was really getting excited about the that we now finally have more accessible means to code now with Xcode, where Xcode was so alien and a lot of things just didn't work the way we want to. And they put an emphasis in coding. And so those I've always dreamed to be a coder can now have that reality come through. And plus the I love how you can, when they analyze the code for the iPad to move over to the Mac, that includes the accessibility with it.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I think that was a question a lot of people would have had. And yeah, because it seems like, I think they renamed it. That was Project Marzipan last year. And
correct.
It wasn't an overwhelming success. I think anyone, you know, even Craig Federighi said on stage, look, we learned a lot. You know, that was 1.0 and this is 2.0 now. And they've given it a new name and a new lease of life, I think, hopefully. So,
well, the Catalyst in itself is a whole different subject and topic, because that we can go on forever, because there's a lot of things we want to know. How's this going to work? How's it going to feel? How's it going to smell? Everything about it on the Marzipan, which is now Catalyst, is going to be very interesting. I can't wait to dive in. I'm excited that they finally put accessibility under settings. I heard that rumor before this cast, and I was excited to hear that they put that up front and foremost with other important buttons under settings.
Yeah, and it's not down the bottom. You know what I mean? It's under, she said, right underneath general. So that's only
right underneath general, where you find the display and brightness.
Mm. So yeah, I think it is positive. It's good to see that. And as you said, we're looking forward to getting stuck into iOS 13. Hopefully the whole team will be, as usual, beta testing over the summer. And we'll have, be quashing.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Hopefully.
Yep, well, we will have more information for you, whether it's in terms of podcasts or on the website. Come to applebiz.com to check out in between during the summer, and definitely check back in the fall when iOS 13 and everybody else gets dropped, along with Catalina, the new Apple TV, the new iPad OS, and check out AppleViz for all the latest and greatest and what we found and what you can expect in terms of accessibility and other many things.
Thomas, I think that about wraps it up. So thank you again for joining me.
Oh, it was quite an honor. I enjoyed it so much. I hope you did too, Dave. It was an amazing experience to talk to those two, especially Dean. Now that we now introduced Dean, I think he's coming in as blind and been working there since 2006 was a awesome input on the show. So I love this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. My name is Dave Nason. This is the AppleViz Extra. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AppleViz Extra. To learn more about us, visit our website at www.applevis.com. Follow us on Twitter @AppleViz and like us on Facebook.